Now consider this. You're a contracting officer. Your technical representative recommends one contractor out of three who are competing for task orders. You give eight orders to the recommended one, two to another, and zero to a third contractor. Now, suppose those representatives were bribed by that first contractor. Well, yep, it all ended up in court. Joining us with lessons learned and to help sort this all out in this week's Legal Loop segment, procurement attorney Joseph Petrillo. Joe, good morning.
Morning, Tom.
I can say procurement. I've been saying it for 25 years. Sometimes I have a little trouble getting that one out.
Well, maybe you should switch to acquisition.
Yeah, acquisition. Yeah, it starts with an A. So give us the background in this case.
Sure. This is one of those multiple award IDIQ contracts. This one was for roofing services at the NASA installation in Houston.
So big roofing.
Big roofing, one hopes, yeah. And there were competitions, or supposed to be competitions, between the three contractors who got these contracts to see who was going to get the task orders. One contractor did very well in those, got 8 out of 10, another got 2, and the third got 0. The one who got 2 found out later that two of the COTARs, had been convicted under the federal criminal statute for conflict of interest, taking personal and substantial action in an official matter in which they had a financial interest. So they were getting some kind of payment from the other contractor, the one who got eight orders, and somehow they ended up with 8 orders. So putting two and two together, the contractor filed a claim with the contracting officer alleging that there had been a breach of the fair opportunity to compete that the contract guaranteed him.
So it seems like a cut and dried case, but they lost the protest.
Well, it wasn't a protest, really. The problem with these task order contracts is you can't protest a task order if it's under $10 million, with certain exceptions that weren't relevant here. And so what they're coming in on is basically a breach of a contractual duty to provide them a fair opportunity to compete for the orders.
And so the response to that ordinarily is something that the contracting officer, him or herself, decides?
Well, yeah, that's a claim, so the CO decides it. And the CO dodged the issue here, saying, well, this has to do with fraud, and you're not really giving me any details, and anyway, I really can't decide fraud under the Contract Disputes Act, and that's true, denied the claim. So the contractor appealed to the Armed Services Board of Contract Appeals, and there the government basically renewed those objections. Government said, first of all, well, you don't have jurisdiction, board, to hear this claim because it involves fraud. And also, there aren't enough facts to prove fraud here, so give us summary judgment. And they lost on the motion on both counts.
So why would fraud not be a sufficient factor to limit competition in terms of someone trying to get a claim?
Well, that's the most interesting part of the case, and we really don't have a definitive answer on that. If we were talking about fraud by the COTARs, the question is, would that be sufficient in the award decision to win? And the board basically said, well, these were decisions by the contracting officer, so we have to focus on what the contracting officer's conduct was. And that, there's no allegation right now that that involves fraud, so the government's argument that you can't collect for fraud doesn't really apply. We'll have to see if the facts get fleshed out here how these COTARs activities fit into this. But the board did note that it's kind of odd for the government to claim there's no jurisdiction because of fraud when it wasn't the contractor's fraud. It was fraud by others directed at the government, which also harmed the contractor. So there's some interesting issues that aren't resolved by this case, but they did decide that they could continue to hear the case, even though there might be some fraud involved in some of the actions of some of the actors.
So if the contracting officer makes an award based on information from his, now they call them contracting officer representatives, CORs, but they used to be called COTARs, as you mentioned, and that information was tainted by a bribe, we've determined so far that the contracting officer can't give any relief to the losing contractors. can he then disbar or suspend somehow the contractor that bribed those contracting officer representatives?
Well, that would certainly be grounds for debarment and suspension in this instance. And I haven't really checked to see if this particular contractor was debarred or suspended. I would expect that they had been. The issue really is kind of interesting. If you're also the victim of fraud, what kind of relief do you get? And the government here is arguing none. So we'll have to see, if this case moves forward, what kind of relief is obtained. I think having lost this motion, it probably would be the smartest move for the government to figure out how to settle the case, because if it does go forward, it's probably going to look pretty messy.
We're speaking with Joe Petrillo, a procurement attorney with the law firm Petrillo and Powell. And so now this will basically move out of the whole administrative process and move into the justice system.
Well, yeah. I mean, the Board of Contract Appeals is theoretically formally an administrative board, but they act pretty much like a court and hold hearings, have discovery. The case will now move forward. Another interesting fact is that the government argued that the contractor didn't have sufficient facts to support its allegations. And, that's kind of a catch-22, because the selection information for these various orders is inside the government. What happened is, knowledge that's inside the government, not in the contractor's hands. The board basically said, well, no, we really need to have the facts fleshed out here, so we're not going to give you summary judgment.
But what about the convictions of those two contracting officers, technical representatives? Wouldn't that be sufficient to say something went wrong because another court convicted them?
Well, absolutely, and it certainly leads to a suspicion here that, first of all, I think induced the court to have the board rather to have the case move forward, and secondly, the board noted that even though it cannot determine questions of fraud, it doesn't have to, because a criminal conviction for conflict of interest does that. I mean, it determines that there was this improper activity that took place and the basic nature of it. So, the board is now in the situation of determining the contractual obligations of the parties with the understanding that there have been these criminal convictions and they established the facts that were sufficient for the conviction.
You know, Joe, I wonder if there's a bigger issue in all of this, because in almost every endeavor of business life, securities, in the environment, transportation, you have federal agencies with administrative procedures that resemble courts. But they're not really courts because they're not part of the judicial branch of government. They're part of the executive branch. And you find a lot of companies, and the rules are often the discovery rules and the cross-appeal rules and so forth are often very, very different from what one is entitled to in a judicial court. Could this be a case where, maybe someone should go to court in the first place and try to skip the administrative proceedings?
Well, you would be able to go to the Court of Federal Claims on this kind of a contract dispute. The procedures are somewhat different there, but not remarkably different. But the broader question is an interesting one, which is, are people getting the level of justice they deserve in these administrative forums? I mean, I can point to a number of different legal doctrines in government contracting at which the contractor is at a distinct disadvantage in dealing with the government as opposed to how it would be if it were dealing with a private party. Are those wise? Are they necessary? Do they improve the contracting process? I mean, these are issues that have been with us a long time, and I think we get used to them in the field, but every now and then we should take them out and look at them critically and try to make the kind of decision that you've outlined.
Yeah, because you look at an SEC judge or an EPA type of judge, I think Homeland Security even has these forums. Those are employees of the agency in a sense in judgment of the actions of their colleagues.
Well, I have to say, by and large, the boards of contract appeals are considered to be very independent. We don't perceive, at least in the government contract bar, that there's any pro-government bias there in the boards. I mean, there are some advantages the government has in legal doctrines, but mm-hmm. In terms of the adjudicative process, The board members are usually competent and appear to be totally independent. And there are institutional safeguards that are set into the process of naming the board judges and keeping them that help that continue to be the case.
So maybe that could be the model for some of the other administrative courts that maybe don't have the maturity that you find in the contract area.
Well, you got to have good people, and you got to give them independence. And if you don't do that, then all the other things you do are going to be questionable.
All right, interesting case. Joe Petrillo is a procurement attorney with the law firm Petrillo and Powell. As always, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Tom.